The Irish Independent. This is Dr. Anthony Staines provides their lead story today. He's professor of health systems at DCU, and he says we're facing four more waves of deadly COVID. So he says that we are in the second wave at the minute. The third wave will come at the end of September, October. The fourth wave will be at Christmas. The fifth wave will be late February and early March. The sixth wave, April or May, and I think he's kind of assuming that hopefully we'd have a vaccine at that stage. So that is that's his outlook on it. Let's talk to Cillian de Gascoigne, who's director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory and a member of NEFID. Good morning, Cillian.
Good morning, Brendan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thanks for joining us. You read that story, I presume, Dr. Anthony Staines on the front of the Indo there. So would you agree with that we're looking at four or five waves here? He seems to be basically saying that they will come every kind of month, 6 weeks, two months.
Yeah, I think it's really difficult to predict something like that because, again, when we're talking about waves in the context of coronavirus, I suppose a lot of the information that we've learned in relation to waves comes from influenza, which, as we know at this stage, is a different virus. So the classic influenza pandemic was 1918, and there were probably three waves in the course of over a couple of years. So I think we've interrupted the first wave here, arguably, through our stay-at-home restrictions and through the fantastic effort by everybody in the country in through April through June. So it's difficult to know from a virology perspective. We're probably still in the first wave in some respects because there hasn't been any significant change in the virus, but we've just interfered in that process. So typically, and again, if we look to seasonal influenza, typically the virus dissipates because there's either a change in the level of population immunity, there's a change in climactic factors, or there's a change in people's behavior. And that's why we typically see the seasonal pattern with influenza. Unfortunately, with SARS-CoV-2, we don't have that underlying population immunity in the community. We obviously saw that the summer didn't really have any great effect on it from a weather perspective, which was disappointing, but probably not hugely surprising. So really, people's behaviour is what we have to count on to control it for the coming months until we do have an effective treatment or hopefully an effective vaccine in the next year.
Okay, so it's like this for the time being, I guess, is what you're saying, right? Paul Reid, I notice now, has kind of changed the emphasis that he's saying that they're not really preparing in the HSE for this massive second surge that we kind of were led to believe would be the next thing, but that they're looking at that it'll be ongoing spikes like this. So is that how it'll be bumping along like this for a while?
I think that's probably one way to describe it. No, I would agree with Paul, purely because people have taken the public health message to heart so well, and the majority of people are continuing to do the right things the majority of the time. So if we did nothing, we know that the virus is still very transmissible. We know that the R0 can get up to between 3 and 5. So if we did nothing, we would absolutely expect to see a significant second surge in the coming winter. But as I said, thankfully, people are following the public health measures. And we know that with physical distancing, with hand hygiene, with face coverings, with all of the measures that people have been implementing so well, that will have an impact on the winter season. It will have an impact on all of the other respiratory viruses, including influenza, because we've seen, for example, in Australia, that they had a very mild influenza season because of the impact of all of the public health measures. So I think it's important that we reassure people to a degree that we can control this.
Obviously, okay, so we're not going to get back to where we were at earlier this year with the health service and the hospitals, you think?
No, I would certainly hope so. But I think it's important to say that that's only the case if everybody continues to act the way they have been acting. We can't go back to the way we behaved, I suppose, before January. Yeah.
Gotcha. Now, Anthony Staines was talking, I suppose, in the context of he is one of the advocates for Zero COVID Ireland. That is not the strategy now, nor will it be the strategy now.
It's a really good question, because there's not a huge amount of difference between. So if you go back to where we were in June and, say, July, where the level of virus in the community was less than 300,000 and we were reopening society gradually, that's pretty much where we want to be. So there's not a massive difference between zero COVID and our current strategy. Ultimately, we want to suppress the virus as much as possible in the community while allowing people to get back to school, to get back to work, and to protect our vulnerable, and obviously to protect the healthcare service. So it's they're not sort of diametrically opposed opinions. We obviously are a very open community and open economy, and we have seen, I suppose, the impact that the stay-at-home restrictions have had on everybody and as society. So what we want to try and do is open as much of that as possible, which we have done, but equally what we want people to remember is that although we're reopening society and getting back to the activities that we used to do, we have to do them in a different way. So there's nothing that is zero risk, unfortunately. So we want people to get to school. We want people to be able to go out, have dinner with friends. We want people to be able to have friends over to their house. But the thing is, when they do those things, we have to do them differently now. So it's really like a change of behaviour. And I suppose an analogy that we might use is the way we sort of change from plastic bags to bags for life. This is a change in behaviour that has to stay with us for the coming years.
Okay, listen, be careful about getting into making comparisons with bags and trampolines and all that kind of stuff. You land yourself in trouble. Listen, the health minister did talk in recent days about that we could be at a tipping point. We could be looking at a second national lockdown. Could we be looking at a second national lockdown? Because my understanding is that most countries now are basically saying we are not going to go back to a national lockdown, that we there are better ways of managing this.
Yeah, absolutely. We really want to avoid a second national lockdown or moving back to the stay-at-home restrictions, if at all possible. And I think what the minister was speaking about was probably in the context where obviously we introduced additional national restrictions there in the middle of last week. And those measures we would hope to see taking effect sort of really from this weekend onwards and through the next week. So he is right in the context that the next week to 2 weeks are a critical phase, purely because we implemented those measures, as I said, about 7 days ago now. So now is when we want to see those taking effect. So it's really important that people continue with the enhanced sort of measures and the enhanced public health guidance, purely because
we could be at a tipping point here, but hopefully not. But are you saying then that a national lockdown is still on the menu?
I think we would never exclude anything. Our priority from an effort perspective, our priority is protecting public health and protecting as many lives as possible. And so we have to be very careful about that. We don't want to go back into a national lockdown if we don't have to. But I think the key thing to remember about the stay-at-home restrictions is that they did work. And that's why it's there. It's kept, I suppose, it's a tool in the armoury that you never exclude definitively, purely because it has been successful, and it's been successful in many countries, but it's only been successful in the context of controlling the virus. It's obviously had very significant effects on the economy, on mental health.
And it's only successful until you open up again as well, isn't it?
Well, exactly. That's the thing. So you can't sustain it for a very prolonged period of time. And again, we want people to remember that they did very well as a society, as a population. We were reopening quite well through June and July, and then just it was a reminder that the virus, given the right set of circumstances, as I said, hasn't changed dramatically. It's still very transmissible if given the right conditions. And I think,
but Killian, the numbers aren't going up dramatically either, are they? I know we have a lot more cases than we had a month or two ago, but at the same time, it's not in that kind of exponential growth at the moment. I mean, the R number is somewhere coming back down to somewhere around one. The numbers are not shooting up from where they were at last week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, that's a really key message that we want people to remember, that we can control this. So you're right, at the very start, we saw an R naught of between 3 and 5. All through March, the rate of growth was exponential, as you describe. What we're seeing now is that a couple of weeks back, the R naught had crept above 2 again. But in the last probably 2 to 3 weeks, again, people, through their efforts, have brought the R naught back to, I think Professor Philip Nolan reported between, our best estimate is between 1 and 1.2 as of Thursday. So it's coming down again. Now, the key thing is we do need to get it below 1, but you're absolutely right. So the rate of growth is slow, but at the same time, we just need to get it back below 1 so we can see that the epidemic is shrinking again, if you like. At the moment, it's still growing.
Okay. Listen, time is against me. There's a couple of other things I want to touch on briefly. The Taoiseach are pointing out there that pubs are open everywhere else in Europe, and he says that they're looking at protocols we could put in place to open pubs here. Can you see that happening in the next few months?
So I think from my perspective, obviously I'm not an expert in the hospitality industry, and neither is NEFA. So we're very conscious of that. So if there are measures that the industry can put in place to reopen safely, we just know at this point in time that as we had our reopening framework, that pubs were in the last phase of that, and unfortunately we never quite got to the last phase because of the level of virus activity in the community. But certainly we know that in the majority of cases, obviously restaurants have opened successfully and safely, and it may be a case that the pub model needs to change. So as I said, we know from international experience and from some clusters here ourselves that the way we would have gone to pubs in the past are probably the highest risk environment, or one of the highest risk environments at least. But as I said, if the way pubs are operated can change to minimise that risk, then absolutely we're okay. conscious of the impact that it's had on that sector.
And look, a lot of pubs are open and seem to be largely managing it well and changing the way they do things. Killian, can I ask you about schools before we go? So look, fingers crossed, some schools have opened this week. Obviously, we haven't seen any problems yet. Do we need to get used to now, do you think? I know that it will be a case-by-case thing. Public health come in and they will do the standard thing they do. Should we anticipate that we're going to have the kids at home with us a little bit at times over the winter? Should we anticipate schools closing now and again, classes being sent home? Is that the reality of life now?
Again, I think the priority is to try and keep schools open as much as possible, because obviously children have been affected very significantly by this pandemic over the last 6 months. So what the guidance that has been developed by the HPSC and in conjunction with the Department of Education, and it's important to highlight the work that teachers and principals and schools have done over the last few months. So the aspiration through, you know, bubbles and pods is to minimise the number of contacts that an individual child will have on a daily basis in the school, so that if a child does get infected, that the school itself or the class won't necessarily need to be closed down. Obviously, that we can't exclude that happening definitively. It'll depend on where the case came from, for example. So if a child has acquired the infection in the household and has gone into school, then in that situation, the school probably wouldn't need to be affected significantly at all.
Okay. But so are you optimistic enough then about schools staying open largely?
I would be, because I think if we look, so from a virology perspective, again, we know that the virus can get into children. We know they can be infected, and we know that the virus can replicate in children. But what we have seen is that the majority of them tend to be asymptomatic. And I think it's probably with the public health measures that we have in place, asymptomatic transmission, while it can occur, is probably not a significant factor. And I think that's probably one of the reasons, or one of the explanations, for the difference between children and adults. So with the public health guidance, asymptomatic transmission, we can probably control an awful lot easier. And from a symptomatic perspective, it's just important for schools, for workplaces, for everything, that people don't go into work or don't go into school sick. So it's just really important that individuals take that on.
Okay. Have you been to the pub?
I did. I had a lunch in a pub, operating as a restaurant a few weeks back, and I sat out there. They were all very good.
Yeah. Will you go out to a restaurant this weekend, or would you?
I'm really conscious of trying to support, I suppose, sort of a local industry. So I would try to go out sort of for, I suppose, either for the sort of lunch or dinner sort of every weekend if I can, to try. Well, partly because it saves me having to cook, but also. Yeah. Also, just to try and support local industry, I think that's really important.
And you're comfortable largely?
Yeah, no, as I said, I think most of the industry have done. And as I said, the thing is, if I weren't comfortable, there are places that I wouldn't go back. But no, the places that I've been to have been very good, I have to say.
Okay, Killian de Gascoigne, thanks as always. Let's take a break.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.